Our next case this morning is number 05-2950, Burks against the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, et al. Why don't we let the courtroom clear, Mr. Lasker, before we begin? Thank you, sir. I think we can begin now.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court, Judge Ripple. I'm David Lasker, representing Pamela Burks, the plaintiff in this case. In preparing, I've reviewed my briefs and the substance of what we have to say. I don't think I can add to what's in our brief and our reply brief, but I do want to cover the high points. The district court in this case determined that the matter should not go to trial, and it dismissed the action by granting a Rule 56 motion for summary judgment. By doing so, the district court held that the record did not support Burks' constitutional right to a jury determination of the facts. The evidence that is in the record, we contend very clearly, supports each and every element of her claims for race discrimination, disability discrimination, and Title VII and First Amendment retaliation. The evidence consists of the affidavit of the plaintiff herself, a lengthy document, many pages, many paragraphs, that lays out her story of what happened to her as she tried to get the job, tried to keep the job, and then got fired. And it also details her efforts to get the defendants to stop their race discrimination and their discrimination based upon her disability.
Now, I take it that your race, it's a McDonnell-Douglas kind of analysis that you're putting forward for the race discrimination claim, right? Because she was the only African-American, Hispanic in the department, and so you need to go through the McDonnell-Douglas factors. And I guess I want to ask you, I think the district court, I'm not sure whether it's better characterized as a finding that there were no genuine issues of fact on pretext or whether there was no genuine issue of fact that the defendants genuinely believed that she was not performing the job adequately. Those are often kind of two sides of the same coin, it seems to me. But what's your best evidence that a trier of fact, if they believe that evidence, could find that she was, in fact, performing the job properly?
Well, the best evidence includes some of the exhibits to the Burks affidavit, which show that she got good reviews the first time around.
Her first review was good, that's right. But then, you know, our law says you have to look at how the person was performing at the time they were let go, and the story that one hears from the other side is that, in fact, her performance didn't keep up.
Well, I think that the most important evidence is probably the affidavits of Ms. Cole and Ms. Brigham Abrug. They give testimony in their affidavits for what they saw the defendants do and what they heard the defendants say. They participated in meetings where Burks wasn't even around and got to hear what was being said by both of the women who were the adversaries to Burks. And they also, Cole, worked side by side with Burks on these projects. And she was able to see on a daily basis the quality of the work that Burks was doing.
So your argument is that Cole has personal knowledge, even though she's not a supervisor or otherwise, that she has personal knowledge that the quality was there and it was simply not being recognized by the evaluators.
Right. And she also had personal knowledge of them berating her, screaming at her, treating her differently, far differently than anybody else in the workplace.
But do we know that the berating and screaming was either racially or disability based?
Well,
some people are just unpleasant, and that's unfortunately maybe not against the law.
But usually if you're unpleasant, you're an equal opportunity unpleasant person, and that wasn't the case here. Ms. Cole also got to see that the work of Burks was of the same quality throughout the period that she worked there. One of the things the defendant said is that her work just went down in quality. And they say that happened after she had completed about 98% of the work on the project.
Where does this 98... You cite that number, that she had a 98% completion rate on this LRIP, or however, you know, the local roads improvement projects. Where does that... Who came up with that number?
The number is found on one of the documents that is an attachment to the Burks affidavit.
But who did it? Was that management who came up with that number?
Yeah, that's just a printout from the computer that says, you know, there were this many to do, there are this many that have been completed. And so it's objective evidence that comes from the computer. It's a printout, and that's merely what it is.
Mm-hmm. Is it based on her inputs into the system? Because what I'm going to ask, actually, just advance notice, your opponent, is whether we ought to take into account the statements made about the condition of her desk at the time she left, and if so, how that may throw light on whether she was really completing all these projects or not.
Well, the evidence, first of all, the printout itself was based upon just objective fact, not any input from Burks per se, as far as the percentage of projects completed was concerned. The evidence, Ms. Cole testifies that what she found on Burke's desk was no different than what you would find on her desk or anybody else's desk, and that it's not extraordinary, and gives a number of reasons why it's not extraordinary.
And they were saying they had to call these local road people and reconstruct the records in various cases. Again, maybe we shouldn't look at that, maybe we should, but it sounds disturbing when you read it.
Well, yes, but that's what they say, that's what the defendants say, and that's in conflict with what the plaintiff and her witnesses say. And they don't cite any specific instances whatsoever in any of this, including in the document that we claim is the pretext for terminating her employment. All five of the criticisms we've demonstrated are not true, at least for a jury to determine that. The affidavit of Wendy Brigham Abrug is important, too, because she, although not a supervisor, she was a trainer. And she was responsible for overseeing all of the work of everybody in the agency with regard to the running of this program. She trained and she reviewed the material. And she had a great opportunity to see how Burks was doing. And she compared Burks' performance favorably when even comparing it to Forlenza and Traska. I think... And I mentioned this in my brief, but I think it's significant that the two women from the workplace had the courage to come forward and give these affidavits. I mean, after all, they worked there. They continue to work there for the same bosses. And I think that the clarity and the forthrightness with which they speak in these affidavits really shows that they felt that they had perfect evidence that Pam was being unfairly treated, and there's no other explanation.
You generally have said that the testimony of co-workers is not relevant or probative on the issue of pretext. Why should it be different in this case?
In this case, we're talking about objective evaluations of the performance by Pam Burks. The question of pretext is one that goes to whether or not she was doing the job. And in this case, these affiants themselves evaluated the work throughout that period and said that it compared the same as everybody else's, and it didn't change its quality along the way.
Well, did they look at it from a quality or a quantity perspective?
They mostly looked at it from quality, but quantity too, except that the computer printout just gives that information objectively.
As I understand it, management wasn't so much worried about how many of these projects she completed. They were more concerned about the quality of the product. Isn't that correct?
Well, that's what they say. But then Cole was comparing her work with Burks's all along the way, as far as quality is concerned. And Brigham Abrug was reviewing what was being done to see to it that it was being done right. So they have objective personal observations of these facts. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, please.
Thank you, Mr. Lasker.
May it please the Court, my name is Michael Lossie. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Wisconsin Department of Justice, and I represent the defendants appellees in this case. I would like to note that that the caption reads Mark Traska. It actually is Mary Traska. Mary for Lorenza, Wisconsin Department of Transportation, and Marcia Traska. Subject to answering the court's questions, there's three points I would like to make. The actual affidavits upon which plaintiff hinges this case, primarily the two co-employees, do not live up to what they're represented as, to what they're dramatized as in either plaintiff's proposed findings of fact in the trial court or especially in the brief here. The affidavits on their face don't say what they're represented to say. They're on their face full of opinion, speculation, and in fact tend to support what the defendants are saying here about performance deficits because they make excuses for the performance deficits. The second point I'd like to make is that the court properly disregarded plaintiff's argument on the Rehabilitation Act claims. The district court is to be judged on what the record was before it, and part of the record is a plaintiff's responsibility to prosecute a case and adequately brief it. The district judge has almost two pages of citations to support that. That was not done in this case. The district court can't be judged on the brief that was filed here when the brief filed in front of her did not develop claims. The third point I want to hit on is it's unwarranted and unnecessary to accuse the district judge of personal bias, and it isn't true. I would like to respond to Judge Wood's question, I believe, about the computer printouts. I don't know what these documents in the Burks affidavit are. There was no foundation laid for them. I don't know what they show. Apparently, I don't think she... They must be generated in DOT somewhere, but there's no foundation laid. There's conclusions drawn from them that are not supported by any rational process. And on their face, they don't even support what she's saying.
Did you point this out to the district court?
Pardon?
Did you point this out to the district court?
I believe we did, Your Honor, to the extent of saying there's no foundation, it's not evidence, we're not going to deal with it. I'm looking at them on their face, and the first one reports Ms. Burks is completing 8.96%, and Maria Cole is completing 50%. It goes on to Pam Burks 39% and Maria Cole 75%. That really doesn't even taken on its face without any authentication, any explanation as to what these are, doesn't prove her point to begin with. I would also note that on page 4, there's some reference to Ms. Cole completing 103%. Now, clearly, these documents needed some explanation to have any probative or evidentiary value at all, and there's none given by the plaintiff. She just threw them in. It appears to me that the linchpin to the appellant's case is that affidavit of Wendy Brigham Abrook. She tries to represent her as sort of a quasi-manager. She is not. The affidavit of Rod Clark, clearly, who is a bureau director, clearly establishes that Ms. Brigham Abrook is simply a co-employee. She doesn't report to Traska. She does computer work, which is different, but she's a member of the union, a co-employee, and not by any stretch of the imagination a co-manager who could rebut the opinions of Supervisor for Lorenza.
Well, let me be specific about this for a minute. I'm looking at the copy of her affidavit in the plaintiff's appendix, and she says, you know, she describes the fact that she's in this computer area, and she says in paragraph 6, she trained Burks and Traska in data entry and retrieval related to the LRIP computer application, and she goes further through the rest of the affidavit talking about her training responsibility, if you will. Now, I recognize being a trainer isn't necessarily being the same thing as a supervisor, but it does mean that if the question on the table is how well are you using the program, maybe she is in a position position somewhat different from that co-employee position that Judge Ripple was talking about, that we've said, you know, just the person in the desk next to you who's doing exactly the same thing you're doing might not be the right person to look to. But
Your Honor, that was dealt with in the second affidavit of Florenza and Rod Clark, wherein they explained that, yes, she did have some training capacity, but Traska was brought in on a lateral transfer to supervise this work unit, and they wanted to expose her to what her employees do.
Right, but I'm just saying, if the question on the table is, was Pam Burks properly using the LRIP program, then Brigham Abrook says she's the one who trained her, and she, you know, actually it's not sort of unequivocal glowing, but she's saying, you know, Burks had some problems, but the problems were about the same as the problems everybody else had, certainly no worse, et cetera.
I think what I could say to that, Judge, is that she is not the manager. She is not the person entitled to make that judgment. Even if part of her job is a co-employee, union member, involved training people on the computer, she's not in a position to judge the performance of Ms. Burks.
Really? So you would say she's not competent to render an opinion on Ms. Burks' facility, at least with the computer program, to whatever extent that was relevant to her job? I'm surprised. I mean, because you would think a computer person is the one that the managers would be listening to, unless they're computer people too.
I do not think she's competent, Your Honor. And I would, if I could, support or corroborate what I'm telling you by asking you to go down further in the affidavit, where she starts to lay the groundwork for her admissions that Pam Burks was not doing well. Paragraph 12, she says, it was difficult for the employees to use the program. Paragraph 13, it was difficult for all employees, including Burks. Paragraph 15, Burks was hired at a bad time. I do not believe anyone could have been completely successful with this learning curve and the enormous workload. I think Burks performed well under the circumstances.
Well, all I'm saying is if we're asking was Burks worse than everybody else, this doesn't really say that. If we're asking, you know, because if Burks is the same, then why is she the only one who's fired?
Our position is, Your Honor, from all of the evidence in the record, she clearly wasn't the same. And I respect the fact that this court and you, Judge, have to review this affidavit and see what evidentiary value it has to you, draw your
sure.
own conclusions. But I don't think it says she's doing well. I think it's laden with opinion, speculation, and making excuse for the performance deficits. For example, paragraph 20, she says there's the absence of signed agreements that Burks's supervisors listed as a performance deficit. All she says is, I don't recall being informed of that. If a problem had existed, it's very likely I would have been informed. That's not just mere opinion. That's conjecture, and it's utterly irrelevant. Paragraph 22, she says, she's talking about the alleged hostility that Forenza or Traska exhibit toward Burke. She says, it's not so much what they said as the way they said it. That's utterly irrelevant to what's going on in a race discrimination, handicap discrimination lawsuit. It's utterly subjective. Paragraph 23, recall that Janice Watsky is the supposed comparative. You, Judge Woods, mentioned that this is McDonnell-Douglas test, comparatives. They mention the Watsky name, but they never develop their case to compare it to Watsky. That element of a prima facie case is utterly lacking, and all Brigham Abruch has to say about it is Janice Watsky complained that the job was difficult, but in Abruch's opinion, it was easier now.
Well, she needed training, and I guess the comparison is that Watsky, A, gets the training right away that Burks had been asking for and hadn't really gotten, and B, that on the disability side, Watsky got the workstation adjustment right away, and it took a long time, and actually it was never quite finished for Burks.
Judge, regarding the accommodation, if I could jump over to that. Ms. Burks made a big deal of Exhibit A to her affidavit, which is what she says her request for accommodation. It's actually a self-identification survey. It looks like one of those trifold sheets. It's unsigned. It does have her name on. It's undated. And the only thing she lists there is adjustable chair, amplified telephone, and leave the workstation every 2 hours. All this other stuff was overlaid later, and I submit some of it is being reconstructed after the historical fact.
And what about this testimony about the stapler remover? I mean, that sounds so petty for the supervisor not to let her use type B versus type A without a doctor's note. I mean, these are not the kinds of things that...
Yes, with all respect, Judge, I think you've misinterpreted what the allegation was. For that particular thing, the stapler affixing documents, Mary Falorenza quickly did respond to it, and that's what prompted Exhibit E to Pam Burke's affidavit, the email that says, Mary, thanks. I appreciate your prompt response to my request for disability accommodations. Your efforts to coordinate through immediate action and display of respecting my confidentiality are commendable. Pam, with a happy face. This is utterly inconsistent with the tale of woe they're trying to advance in this court. And this is one of the two historical documents generated by...
Would you do me a favor?
Yes.
Move close.
I'm sorry. This is one of the two historical documents generated by Pam Burks at the time she was employed. It's utterly inconsistent with the theory advanced in this court. And that is where I believe the stapler remover was dealt with. The other thing where it was restructuring the module of the workstation is what came later. And as I pointed out, that wasn't even mentioned in her first document, the self-identification survey that Ms. Burks is trying to represent as a written request for accommodation. I also, a couple comments if I could, about the Brigham Abruch affidavit. At paragraphs 24, 25, 26, I believe it's where Brigham Abruch, at least implicitly, if not expressly, acknowledges that Pam Burks had performance problems that she's trying to gloss over in the preceding paragraphs. She says, the problems and difficulties that confronted Burks probably knew no new employee was adequate to fill the position at 24. In 25, I believe that if the plaintiff had started the job when Watsky did, there would not have been great difficulty with it. That's damning with faint praise. That's at least an implicit acknowledgement that there was great difficulty with it. And the issue, and that's the issue before this court. It's got nothing to do with discrimination. And then finally, paragraph 26. My opinion, based on what was said and done, et cetera, was that Ms. Burks didn't perform adequately because of the mounting pressure to account for every detail of her performance imposed on her by Forenza and Traska. I think this affidavit corroborates the defendant's position that there's a performance deficit. And it's laden with opinion, speculation, conjecture. There certainly is nothing about race or handicap discrimination in it, and it certainly doesn't establish pretext.
Mr. Lucy, your time is running, and I do have like to shift the focus
yes.
a little bit, if I may. One of the things that bothers me about your case has to do with the disability discrimination and the length of time it apparently took for the department to accommodate the plaintiff in the case. I understand there's an issue of fact as to when she first asked for accommodation, but construing the facts in light most favorable to her, it does seem like there was quite a wait.
Your Honor, I don't believe that that is the case if one looks closely at the record. The big thing to her throughout this case is the chair. Now, there is a dispute which of fact, which we don't believe is a material dispute, as to when she got the chair. Florenza says she asked for it in April, sent her to the chair lab, and she got it. Remember that Burks started in October. Burks herself said she got a loaner new chair the month after she started. Burks herself says that. It's clear that some of this minor stuff she got right away, and that's reflected in the email thanking for Florenza. The delay occurred after Whitehorse, forget the person's first name, who does the ergonomic assessments of workstations. These are modular cubicles. They have to be built structured. Came there. And on the 15th, did an evaluation, and then it was in her ballpark to get the construction done. They were going to raise the workstation or do whatever they needed to do. I don't believe that the record, when you go down it line by line, actually shows any delay, and it has nothing to do with discrimination and was out of Trask and Florenza's hands by that time. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Losey. How much time does Mr. Lasker have? Thank you.
Your Honors, let me, if I may, take up the business about the difficulty that occurred in the beginning and not thereafter. The facts are that in the work they were doing during the first 6 months, they had to accomplish about 60% of all that would be done in a two-year period. And also the evidence shows that in this particular six-month period, they were implementing new computer programming and new software and new processes, which everybody was having difficulty with. And in fact, during that six-month period, they were changed three different times. Now, all of this happened while Burks was swimming along with everybody else, and Watsky didn't have to deal with that at all.
Is it your position then that if we can take from these affidavits simply facts that, if believed, would show that Burks was exactly the same as everybody else, that's enough. You don't have to show that she was working problem-free or anything.
That's correct. Sure. Yes. Yes.
Well, what about that email that seems to strongly imply that whatever requests she had made were attended to promptly?
Ms. Burks, in her affidavit, explains that email and says that she wrote that as an effort to respond positively to one small thing that was done by Florenza, and as an effort essentially to use sweetness as a way of getting the results she needed instead of complaining or what have you.
Do you have any evidence that would show why there was such a notable change of tone between that first performance review and the subsequent three-month and then six-month, eventually six-month period?
Well, I don't know. Burks doesn't know. Cole doesn't know. And Wendy Brigham of Brooke doesn't know why that would be.
I mean, they knew she was disabled at some level when they hired her. Presumably during that first 3 months, at least some things, even according to you, the chair, going, even if she had to do it in her own analysis, experimenting with different chairs and the like, were going on. And then suddenly there's this sea change of tone in the workplace.
I have no idea why, and it supports the inference of a pretext, I believe. The opinion point that's made by Mr. Lossie is very important, too. Of course, opinions that are not supported would invade the province of the fact finder, but the opinions that are expressed here, to the extent that there are some, are based upon observations, personal observations over a long period of time. And at some point, when one sees it over a long period of time, they're entitled under the federal rule for opinion, lay opinion evidence, to come to their own conclusion about what's going on here. And these are the opinions that are in these affidavits. I don't see any speculation. The word was used many times by Mr. Lossie, but he didn't say what it is, and I don't know what it is.
What about his foundation point with respect to this computer printout? I mean, I asked the question because I couldn't tell who was putting the data in and who. Surely you need to explain what something like that is. You can't just sort of drop it on the table.
Yes, I think that the affidavits do explain it. It's very technical and complicated, and that may be one reason why one could argue that there's no foundation. But the LRIP printout came from the work that they were doing. And for example, I note that he said there's a problem because Cole did 103% of her job, and that is not explained per se. But it's to me, it's knowing statistics, it's obvious that she did a few more than she was assigned, and that's why that happened. Well, I guess my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lasker. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.